This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
It's an honor to welcome to the studio local blogger Rick Sincere. He's online at ricksincerethoughts.blogspot.com. It's been a while. It's good to see you.
It has been a while. Good to see you too, Coy.
How was your summer going? Everything's going well?
Summer's going well so far. I've been doing some home renovations, so things are a bit upside down, but they're almost finished now. I've got two new bathrooms and a deck. And then I'm leaving on a vacation in a couple of days, and I'll be gone for 2 weeks. But just so all the burglars out there know, it's somebody's going to be staying at my house while I'm away.
Now, is this a DIY kind of thing, or are you having people come in and do it?
No, I've hired a contractor. If I had to do it myself, it would still look like a mess 6 months from now or maybe 6 years from now.
Allison and I recently put down tile in the bathrooms upstairs, neither one of which is really big bathrooms. So it was just sort of two little small jobs. And I kept telling her, you know what? I think I can do this. I can get a tile cutter and, you know, it's not that hard. And she looks at me and she said, no. We're going to bring somebody in here. He's going to take care of it. Somebody who does it all the time. You know, it's not rocket science, but there is an advantage you get. There's a lot of talented people in this area who just do this kind of stuff every day. And so I guess that's what you pay for, is somebody
exactly.
who knows what they're doing versus somebody like me who just likes to go to Lowe's.
You pay for the skill, and I have to say that my new bathrooms look terrific.
There you go. Rick, you are the author of a recent op-ed in the Richmond Times-Dispatch, you can read the whole thing, of course, at your blog. Again, ricksincerethoughts.blogspot.com, no www there. Regarding hate crime legislation, and this is something we haven't heard about in a while, but it's interesting to note here that this legislation was recently passed by the House of Representatives.
This particular law or proposed law is known as the Local Law Enforcement Hate Crimes Prevention Act, and it's generally designed to provide federal authority in local cases of murder, assault, vandalism, in which it's considered to be a hate crime. And a hate crime is generally meant to be a bias crime, the biased against a particular group, a minority group, the aged, blacks, Hispanics. And in this case, the controversy that is developed from this particular law is that for the first time it includes sexual orientation as one of the categories that is now covered under federal hate crimes laws. And there are some conservatives who oppose this law simply because it includes gay men and lesbians as a category. And that's not the right reason to oppose the law. The reason the law should be opposed is because it federalizes what should be a local or state responsibility. It creates categories of persons who are somehow more worthy of protection of the law than others, based on their victim status. And also, it's just not part of the constitutional authority that's granted to Congress. Congress does not have this authority granted in Article 1, Section 8 to intervene in state and local issues like this. And that's basically what I argued in my piece in the Richmond Times-Dispatch 2 weeks ago.
And, of course, writing in opposition to your viewpoint was Diana Mason, Executive Director of Equality Virginia, and also a graduate of the Sorensen Institute, and she contends that a hate crime, what does she write here? A hate crime is not like any other crime. While a random act of violence against any individual is always a tragic event, violent crimes based on prejudice have a much stronger impact because they have the power to terrorize an entire community. And, of course, she supports the Senate in Washington, which is, of course, now looking at this legislation. She would support passing this and being federal law.
I think she would have a point if, in fact, these laws were not being prosecuted by local authorities. We had the experience during the Jim Crow era of lynchings across the South, and there had to be federal anti-lynching legislation passed because in parts of the South, you know, juries would not convict someone of a lynching. This was a hate crime that was not in which the law was not being enforced. But if you look at some of the more infamous cases of hate crimes of the past few years, Matthew Shepard's murder in Wyoming, James Byrd in Texas, which both took place about 10 years ago.
That's the guy that was dragged behind the truck.
He was dragged behind the truck.
Yeah.
In both of those cases, the perpetrators were caught by the police, they were prosecuted by the local district attorneys, they were convicted by juries, and they were sent to prison. There's no reason that we need to add a federal element to these cases if, in fact, the local authorities are doing their job. And in virtually every case, the local authorities are doing their job. There's no need to bring this up to the federal level.
Now, a majority of the legislators in the House of Representatives in May, I guess, disagreed with your point. And they passed it. It's now in the Senate. What do you think of the chances that we're going to see the Senate pass this thing?
I don't know, because I haven't been following the issue that closely as far as the legislative process. But my prediction is that it may not even come to a vote before the August recess, just because the Senate has so much business in front of it right now in terms of Iraq legislation, trade legislation, et cetera. They just have a very full legislative calendar right now.
What's been the reaction from folks to your article? You're getting it from both sides.
I was actually rather surprised, because when I wrote about this topic a few years ago, I got a lot of response because it has been a very volatile issue. And I really expected that the Times-Dispatch would have several letters to the editor on both sides of the issue, either reacting against my article or reacting against Diana Mason's article. But there hasn't been a single letter to the editor in the Times-Dispatch. And four or five people commented on my blog, and I welcome comments from anybody who reads my blog. And so there was a little bit of a conversation that took place there. But beyond that, there's been very little reaction. And I think that if this exchange that Diana and I had taken place, say, 8 years ago, we would have seen a much stronger, more ebullient reaction than I've seen in the past week and a half.
Yeah, I was going to say, hate crimes legislation, we were all talking about that years ago. And like I said, at the top of this conversation, it surprises me that I didn't even know that the House had actually passed it.
It's no longer a top of the agenda kind of issue like it was, especially after Matthew Shepard was murdered. That really brought this issue into the forefront, and there was a big national debate about it. And now it's just sort of down near the bottom of the bottom of the heap of legislative issues.
Yeah, but still getting passed.
Still getting passed, but
I think this is a pretty big deal that the House passed this thing and sent it over to the Senate.
If it had been more controversial, if people were talking about it more, that passage may not have been assured.
Yeah. I mean, I'll guarantee you most people aren't aware that this even happened. And this is a very big deal. And what do you say then to the people who, like Diana Mason, who really do support this, who really do feel like we need the federal government to step in these cases where we have crimes based on prejudice in the states?
Well, I think it's really a matter of philosophical and legislative priorities. And for me, it's very important to maintain the balance of power, the division of power that we have in the U.S. Constitution. The more we federalize crimes, the less control we have over the prosecution of those crimes at the local level. I think it's really important to maintain the distinctions between state, federal, and local government. And since hate crimes are being prosecuted, there's really no need to bring this to the federal level. We need to keep government as close to the people as possible.
Right. Well, Thomas Jefferson, yes, that's quite an excellent argument for this neck of the woods. And yet, I guess the people who support it are okay with federalizing the enforcement of these particular crimes.
Well, I hate to generalize, but I would say that a lot of the people who are supporting this legislation would also support other new laws that bring more power to the federal government and take power away from the state and local governments. And I think that's a really sad situation, because we really do need to adhere to the principles of the founders when it comes to stuff like this.
We're talking with Rick Sincere, local blogger. You can read him online at ricksincerethoughts.blogspot.com. He's also the president of Gays and Lesbians for Individual Liberty. And the phone lines are open at 977-1070. Steve is on line one. Steve, thanks for joining the conversation. You're on with Rick Sincere. Go right ahead.
Hi, how are you today?
Very good, very good.
I just have a general point or question, and that is that when we get into the area of hate crimes legislation, I don't know why we're elevating the crime against one person or one person's property above everyone else. If someone's murdered, there are laws on the books about murder, and they should be treated accordingly if they are the murderer. Why do we add these extra penalties or these extra whatever we're trying to do to identify, well, this is a unique kind of a crime? Crime is a crime.
I have to agree with that. in a sense, this kind of legislation is retrograde. In the Middle Ages, it was a greater crime to murder a rich person than a poor person. If you murdered the lord of the manor, you might be put to death. If you murdered a peasant, you might get 40 lashes. And I don't think that we should be making those distinctions. All people are equal before the law.
Oh, good. I agree with you. So, okay, well, have fun.
Steve, thanks so much for the call. And fun is definitely what we're having at 977-1070. The phone lines, I got a phone line open. If you'd like to share your comment, perhaps you support hate crime legislation. Would love to hear from you. And give us a quick call and let us know your position on this issue. Really interesting that this is still being argued. And I want to point out something else that Diana Mason wrote in the Richmond Times-Dispatch. Her whole point is when victims, I'm reading from her column, when victims are targeted because of who they are, the intention is to send a message to others in that same group, intimidating and disenfranchising entire communities. So she seems to be saying it's not a normal murder. It's not a normal attack. You're trying to send a message.
I think she's giving far too much credit to the criminals in this case and attributing to them a certain cleverness that they don't actually have. I agree that there are people who are motivated by bias, prejudice, bigotry, however you want to phrase it. But I don't think most of these people are smart enough to think that this is actually an act of terrorism that is meant to create a sense of fear throughout a community. They just see a black person or a gay person and say, I don't like black people, I don't like gay people, I'm going to hit this guy or I'm going to shoot this guy. They don't think beyond that. Criminals are not the slyest people around.
Absolutely. Rick Sincere is online at ricksincerethoughts.blogspot.com. And you can read his article recently published in the Richmond Times-Dispatch regarding hate crime legislation that was passed by the U.S. House of Representatives. And that's certainly under the radar for most folks. It was passed by the House and is now before the Senate, though it is doubtful that they will get to it this year. Before the recess in August. You also had something really just captivating, and I would recommend that everybody go to your blog and see that. It's really captivating on your blog about a recent visit that you paid to a 7-Eleven that is no longer a 7-Eleven.
I was up in the D.C. area this past weekend, and I had noticed a Washington Post article that said that a 7-Eleven in Bladensburg, Maryland, had been converted into a Quickie Mart, as in The Simpsons, Apu. And so I decided I wanted to see this because, as far as I knew, it was the only one within reasonable distance. There are only 12 of these on the entire North American continent in which a 7-Eleven has been dressed up to look like a Quickie Mart and also selling products related to The Simpsons, like Krusty O's cereal, Buzz Cola, Sprinklicious donuts with pink sprinkles on it. And there are pictures of Homer and Marge and Bart, Lisa, the whole Simpsons gang. And I just find this to be a fascinating sort of marketing gimmick.
Oh, yeah. It's brilliant.
Because Quickie Mart was originally devised as a criticism, a critique of 7-Eleven by the creators of The Simpsons. And now 7-Eleven has adapted the Quickie Mart image in order to market itself. It's very postmodern, and I have to give both 7-Eleven and the people at Fox and The Simpsons credit for doing this. And also that there are only 12 of these, one in Canada and 11 in the United States, really makes it something of a landmark. I understand that they're in the two Quickie Marts in the Los Angeles area, one in Burbank, one in L.A. proper, that there have been lines around the block 24 hours a day of people waiting to get in, where they've had to limit the number of boxes of Krusty O's and number of cans
That's
of
amazing.
Buzz Cola that people can buy.
That is amazing. I mean, people are actually making pilgrimages to see these Quickie Marts.
And taking photos, which is exactly what I did. And I realized as I was doing this that as I'm talking about this, as I'm blogging about this, that I'm doing precisely what 7-Eleven wants me to do.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't mind. I don't mind being used as a conduit to promote them when it's so creative and so much fun. So I probably took about 24 photos, and I think I put 6 or 8 of them up on my blog this morning.
And they're great. I mean, folks have to take a look at them. It is amazing. You're sitting there looking at what looks like a 7-Eleven, and yet it's a Quickie Mart.
It looks more like a Quickie Mart than it looks like a 7-Eleven.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It really does.
Absolutely. And it is so amazing. I mean, only in America would you see this. And I agree. It's completely postmodern that you take what is a critique and a slam, basically, on your business and completely wrap yourself up in it to the extent to where you've completely reinvented yourself.
Yeah, and people are going into these stores expecting Apu to be serving them behind the counter. So they have a big picture of Apu. And of course, the odd thing is that most 7-Elevens are, in fact, run by immigrants. And so that adds its whole new layer of things.
Yeah.
The one in Bladensburg that I went to is owned by an Ethiopian immigrant, and most of the people behind the counter are Hispanic. Most of the customers are Hispanic. It deals with that demographic, and it's probably, according to what I read, that particular 7-Eleven is the one of the most profitable in the whole Mid-Atlantic area.
You can see the pictures on Rick's blog at ricksincerethoughts.blogspot.com. Rick, thank you so much.
Thanks a lot, Coy. I love being here.
And have a great vacation.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SeavillePodcast.com for more.